comes, it goes. In your dreams? No, I'm always awake. It's not a dream, Sifu.
When your father first brought you here, he told me everything. He wanted you to learn Wen Chuan, to protect yourself against the man and other forces.
I thought that was all superstition.
Superstition is a name. The ignorant to give to their ignorance. You are special then. And you're special now. That's why the demon wants you.
We have spent a lot of time together preparing you for this.
What if I won't fight him?
You have no choice. You're fighting for more than yourself.
What are you saying, Sifu?
As I told you, this demon is your inner fear. It doesn't matter how many men you defeat. If you don't conquer your own fears, you will pass your demons onto your children as your father passed his onto you. No. You will fight him.
Hello and welcome to Book vs. Movie. This is a podcast where we read books that have been adapted into movies, and then we try to decide which we like better, the book or the movie. I am Margo P. of ColoniaBook.com, and this is my good friend and co-host, Margo D. of Brooklyn Fit Chick.
Hi, everyone.
Today's kind of an unusual, we were just saying before we got on the air, it's a little bit, if you're brand new, here's the deal. We try to do movies that are based on books whenever possible. But when the pandemic started, we decided to do a brand new episode every single week. And that means we had to expand what we mean by book to include other literary sources, some that are shorter, like magazine articles or a play, or, you know, as long as it's a literary source, we will consider it. But this week we're bending the rules even further because the book that we're going to be talking about is not what this movie that we're talking about is based on. So it's going to be a little bit different. But before we get into that, the thing is we always need to have more suggestions from folks. We are always looking because it's hard to come up with a brand new idea every single week. So we love hearing your suggestions. If you have some suggestions, you want to meet other listeners of this podcast, you have questions for us, there's a few places where we could all interact on the internet.
We do have a basic Facebook page and the episodes are posted there, all of them. But we are much more responsive in our Facebook group. And if you use Facebook, you just type in Book VS Movie Podcast Group and ask to join. And that's where we have a post there where all the shows that Thaddeus put up there, all the past shows, and then there's also a post for all the ideas that people have. But any of the places that I will mention to you, you can send us your ideas. We just ask that the book be pretty easy to get, or it makes sense to pair it with the movie. And the movie needs to be something streaming on a major platform, because we do have a line, like, we just are not going to get a DVD or a VHS tape. We just can't. It gets a little too nutty. So first, the Facebook group is the best, but also on Twitter and Instagram, you can reach out to us. And at both of those places, you spell out book versus and movie. And we also just have an old-timey email. That's a great way to reach us. It's book versus movie podcast, spelled it all out, at gmail.com. And we have some stickers. And Margo, I just sent you a new batch of stickers. You'll get them in the next couple of days. If you'd like that, just let us know.
And if you really enjoy the show and would like to help keep us in books and movies, you can also support us on Patreon.
Yes, Patreon. We put up all of the movies now that are going to be 2021 to now will be on the regular fee. That's over 130 episodes, I believe. That's all free to you. And then everything before that, we put on our Patreon wall. We have a bunch of stuff of our old episodes that are free if you want to go check those out. We just put up The Prime of Miss Jean Brody, Of Mice and Men, Top Gun, A Room with a View, Steel Magnolias, and Blue Crush. We have some really great ones coming up in the next few months. Like I said, they'll be on the Patreon wall. We have a couple of very affordable options, and it really just helps us with books and movies. Sometimes we have to get something that's out of print and things like that, or the software to put all this together. So all of you that support us there, thank you so very much. We really appreciate it. But if money's tight, we totally understand. If you could just leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts, that would be great. Especially in Spotify now, they let you leave reviews, and on Good Pods, all those things. but especially in iTunes, if you really like us, if you can leave us a 5-star review. We know that Apple doesn't make anything easy, and leaving reviews there isn't easy, but those of you that do that, we truly appreciate it. It just helps us find other people to find the show. It helps us find our people.
That's right. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for joining us. And most of all, thank you for you really enjoying books and movies and keeping the conversation going online. It's so much fun. So as I mentioned a minute ago, we are bending the rules a little teensy bit. You know, it is AAPI month, History Month here in the U.S. Last time we did a whole month, which was super fun. And this time, though, we are talking about, it's a little weird because we've never done a Bruce Lee movie. I love Bruce Lee, by the way, spoiler, such a fan. We're talking about Dragon. It's called, what is it called? Dragon, the Bruce Lee Story. Is that what the name of the movie is? Which is based on a book written by his widow, which I believe was called Bruce Lee, the Man Only I Knew, or something like that.
Right.
It is out of print, which is why I'm having trouble like bringing it to mind. You know, in some ways, it's not going to be a totally fair comparison because I honestly don't know what's in that book or how she tells that story. You know, all we have is kind of her interviews to go on. Margo and I were just saying before we got on the air. But what we are going to talk about is a book by, which I think this is as close as we're going to get.
Absolutely.
It's a book by his daughter, Shannon Lee. And Shannon Lee has an amazing podcast. She's a producer. She's an actor. She's quite an extraordinary and accomplished person. And in addition to all of that, she is kind of the manager of the estate of both her late father and her late brother, which we'll talk about a little bit later. And she came out with a book in 2020 called Be Water, My Friend, which is, it's so interesting. It's the premise of the book is that she's kind of walking through some of Bruce Lee's best known and also little known teachings and philosophies and his outlook on life. And she knows she's read all his, she has the whole archive, right? So she really has immersed herself in this. She's explaining it to us in a kind of practical way for today's kind of living. But in between that, she's also giving us pieces of his life story, which I think is, let's talk about Shannon Lee and then we'll talk about Bruce Lee, I think. But let's start with Shannon, because I think that will kind of dovetail into Bruce.
Absolutely. Shannon Emery Lee was born April 19th, 1969, Santa Monica, California. Really nice place. Her parents are Linda and Bruce Lee. She had an older brother, Brandon. She was going to college. She grew up in America. She American and also in Hong Kong. So when she was very, very young, her father was on TV in America. And then the TV show got canceled and he got very frustrated with Hollywood, the racism. And we'll talk more about Bruce's background. So the family moved to Hong Kong for a while where he made these movies. He passed away unexpectedly in 1973. So Janet was just a baby. She barely remembers him. She just has memories of him and how she felt when she was around him. And she...
Yeah, I think she's four, I think, when he died. She's around four.
Yeah.
She's a toddler.
She's a kid. Yeah. She's a baby. I mean, what do you remember at four? It's just impressions, I think, for me anyway. And I didn't lose my father until much later in life, but I get that feeling. I know how that feels. Comes back to America. She's raised up in Seattle and also in Southern California. Bruce had a real affinity for Seattle. He really loved it there. And so that's where he and his son are buried. She grows up and her mother tells her and tells her kids, don't tell anybody that you're Bruce Lee's kid. Really wait a while before you give that information away. Because he became as famous as he was at the time that he was alive. There's just no way to explain how famous he became in the 70s and 80s. That's where he grew up.
It is. It's hard to explain to folks. And what I find so, you know, as I'm kind of reflecting on my rather limited, admittedly, exposure to Bruce Lee movies, although I loved them as a kid, was seeing them on television. You know, on the weekends or in the afternoon, they would be on TV. But this was before cable television, certainly before any kind of streaming. I didn't see a Bruce Lee film in a movie theater until I was in college. I think there was like a film festival and they were playing. And yet, like, and what I'm saying is the media landscape was so much more limited than it is now. Nevertheless, he was a global phenomenon, and for decades after he was gone. Hugely influential, still so influential on global cinema, martial arts, philosophy. I mean, just in so many areas. He's such an accomplished person for such a brief life. I was really impressed reading. Okay, Shannon's book, I just want to say right off the bat, just kind of like first impressions. I found it extremely well written. I think yes. I thought her writing style was excellent. I think she's, you know, because she's explaining or presenting, I should say, some really very cerebral concepts and teachings that her father spent many years of intensive, you know, scholarship, just immersed in this stuff. And to just kind of try to give little bite-sized pieces is not an easy task. And I think she really does an exceptional job, not only of explaining these different teachings and ideas, but also in weaving in her father's life story. It's in a very natural feeling. You really, to me, it really feels like I'm just sitting and having a conversation or interviewing her. It feels very, very natural. It doesn't feel like she's switching back and forth from the Wikipedia page to right. to a personal memory. You know, it has a really nice flow to it, and it's very very accessible and extremely entertaining. I just loved this book.
It's wonderful.
I want to read it. It's going to take a couple reads for me to truly get it. But yeah, it's great, isn't it?
It's wonderful. It's on the Libby app if you want to check it out. There's also an audio book. And it's called Be Water, My Friend, because that was one of Bruce's big messages to the world. It's what he used in his interviews. One of my favorite things to watch on YouTube is people reacting to things. And there's a whole thing about reacting to Be Water, My Friends, and different kinds of people around the world, just like nodding their heads like, yeah, I totally get it. His charisma and magnetism is just off the charts.
It's extraordinary.
Right.
It is like you can't, even like if you see the old, he was on a television show called The Green Hornet in the 60s, where he's playing... The Green Hornet is like a superhero. He's white, and Bruce Lee is playing Kato, his sidekick, who's, you know, supposed to be like Robin to Batman. None of us go on and on and on about like how amazing. I'm sorry, I love Burt Ward and I love the Batman TV series.
They're fun.
But I'm not floored by Burt Ward, is what I'm saying. Well, you watch these old clips and it's campy and schlocky and everything, but Bruce Lee is freaking amazing in this show. He is jaw dropping and he's got like his face covered most of the time.
Right.
And still you cannot look away. The magnetism of this one, like it's just so much in this one person. It's extraordinary. And he's a very good actor to boot.
Like, right.
He's got some real acting chops, but you can't not look at him, and I'm speechless. I have no words. I have no words for the magic of Bruce Lee. It is just, you just can't believe that there's a person like this that ever existed.
Exactly. And that was her father. So that's like when they were growing up, I mean, kids would want to, you know, fight Bruce Lee's kid. I'm certain. Like some, you know, people can be creeps.
Well, okay. So let's talk. Well, we'll talk about that in a minute. But yeah, of course. Not to mention wanting to. There's kidnapping risk. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sure any kind of person would want to take advantage of them because you know they were pretty well off because he was making
big money.
Even not, you know, like Elvis. Like after he's mm-hmm. gone, he's still continuing to make money. Yeah, I get that advice from her mom. That never mind. The people not seeing the person who I am, Shannon or Brandon, because all they can see is this huge figure of my father. There's so many other reasons to kind of keep that under wraps. But at the same time, of course, they must be extremely proud
Yeah.
And so how do you make those two things work together? I don't know, but I'm sure it took a lot of work.
It did. And I think she was saying, and this, I think this is the point in her book. It's like, I've dealt with so many stressful, anxiety producing things, sad things. I've had to manage so many things on such a huge scale at a young age. I mean, she was 24 when her brother was killed on a movie set. So she's saying like these teachings are what really helped her. Her father was into philosophy. He apparently had hundreds and hundreds of books in every place that he lived and was a constant reader. He was constantly writing down ideas. His whole thing was like he got rid of a lot of stuff that was in martial arts that he was taught and he wanted to change it. And so here she is taking all these different philosophies and how if you never want to be in a match again or if you never want to fight, if you never want to do one pose, you can do his teachings to help your life. And it's about calming your mind and being your best self, sticking up for yourself, advocating for yourself. It's
kindness,
empathy.
Yeah.
It's really lovely things. And so she was going to Tulane University studying singing when her brother was killed, like I said. And then she came and she has a Hollywood career. She's done a lot of acting and she's also trained as a martial artist herself. She's also a businesswoman. And like Margot said, she took over the Bruce Lee empire. She's the person in charge. And she has a child and she just seems like such a nice, normal person who's just been through some extraordinary things, wonderful things and very painful things. And it's helpful. It's really nice to hear her voice and it's nice to have, and I'm always going to have this book. I really, really love
it. It's one of those. Yeah. Just get it. Get it. You'll be glad to have it. It's such a good book. And I think it's a book that would be like a great gift. I could think of it like a graduation gift. Mm-hmm. You know, those moments. And anyway, yeah, I wish I had it
as a graduation gift. Oh my God.
Right? There are so many. There's the only thing, and this is me with my, she's about our age. She's maybe a little older than we are, but, the one little thing and I have a hard time going along with, and, which is this idea that, and I get it. I get how Bruce Lee, I mean, if anybody did it, he did it. This idea of, how do I put this? In talking about racism, this idea that we can get rid of racism if you just get to know people.
Yeah.
Is not a thing I really, it's not my experience. I know a lot of people who, you know, I'll put it this way. I think I brought this up before, I think it was Josh Hawley after George Floyd, and he made this stupid speech. I'm pretty sure it was Josh. Sorry, not a fan. he made this dumb speech about like, if you want to cure racism, you know, mow your neighbor's lawn. It's impossible to hate somebody who mows your lawn. And I disagree. I think lots of people hate the person who mows their lawn. I think lots of people have, you know, it's such a deep rooted thing in American culture it exists at every end of the spectrum from conservative to progressive. It's there. It's just kind of just like soaked into our culture in such a way that I think, you know, ignorance is not the issue. I don't know what it is, but I wish it were that simple of a matter of, you know, just getting to know somebody's culture, getting to know somebody personally, finding something to relate to about them. How many times now have we seen people who have so much in common and continue to hate that other person, you know? Right. So that's the only point in the book where I was like, oh, I don't know that I agree with that. But other than that, I appreciate her views on it. And I certainly appreciate the tremendous amount of work that Bruce Lee put into fighting racism is really astonishing. And, you know, nobody can fault him.
No.
My goodness. Wow. But I loved the way that she told this story and also incorporated these teachings in. And I need to think about a lot of them. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm still just freshly just reading it the first time. I feel like I need to go back and reread stuff and strongly recommend this book.
So let's talk a little bit about Bruce Lee and then mm-hmm. we'll go into the movie. And once we don't always say this, but we want to make it clear, We are not experts on Bruce Lee. We're not experts on Kung Fu.
No.
We are not experts on Hong Kong or Hong Kong politics. Or
no.
We just, every time we go in, we try to go in fresh, but we try to learn as much as we can. But
with the beginner's mind.
Right. But if you want to dig deeper, like, we're just starting it for you. Okay.
Yeah.
So just understand. But you and I are both big fans. I've seen, did you see the 40 for 40 documentary, Be Water? It's the ESPN 40, or sorry, 30 for 30.
No, I did not see that.
I'll put a link in the show notes. It's streaming on Amazon, and Shannon was a part of that. So he was born in 1940 in San Francisco. His father was an actor and an opera singer, and his mother was German and Chinese. And pretty soon after they lived in San Francisco, just for a few months, they went to Hong Kong. But he made sure to get the American birth certificate, Bruce's birth certificate. He was born with a different name. There was a sibling he had that was a boy before him who died. And in their culture, they thought that the demons or dragons were coming to get their second son. So they dressed him as a little girl and called him by a girl's name for the first couple of years of his life. And then he heard these stories later. And his father was in the movies in Hong Kong. And so Bruce was in the movies as a child.
Yeah, he was a child actor.
Dozens of movies. And he lived with his family. And they lived pretty well, but it was like one bathroom for like 20 people. It was one of those situations. It was very cramped. And in 1949, is that when it happened? When the communists came to China, or is that 59? It's once again, I'm not an expert on communism either. Communism hits China. So people are trying to get into Hong Kong, which was separate from China until 1999. And so these Brits start coming in, and different people started coming into Hong Kong, moving around the streets. And then it kind of became these fights between cultures. And so Bruce would get into these, you know, he was really into dancing when he was a kid.
Yes, which you can sort of tell by,
oh yeah,
when you watch him. Yeah,
he could do the cha-cha, he could do everything. He was a great dancer. But there are all these fights happening. He wasn't into school. He liked history, he liked English, he liked reading, he liked that stuff, but math and science he had no time for. And he was getting into these fights, and his family was worried about, like, what's going to happen to you if you don't graduate high school here? What's going to become of you? You know, and they saw how he was an only child, and they saw how special he was. So they gave him his American birth certificate and said, go back to San Francisco and go to school and figure it out, because we're worried about you here. Because he was getting arrested and things like that.
Yeah, I was just fascinated by, just the time, his whole, it's such an interesting life story. You know, there's so much cultural mixing going on. I mean, first of all, again, you have his mom who's half German. You have him in Hong Kong in a very contentious time in that area's history. Yes, 1949, you've got the communist revolution happening, but you've also, they're in Hong Kong. So it's going on like right outside the gates, if you will.
Yeah.
And we should talk about also, he starts studying martial arts at 13 in Hong Kong. And So he starts studying at 13 years old with a legendary teacher, Yip Man, right? Mm-hmm. Who is the subject of an amazing movie called Grandmaster. If you've not seen it, that is an extraordinary movie. But Bruce was a very gifted student, and he clearly saw the talent in him. However, there was a problem, which was that he was not 100% Chinese, because his mother was half German. And so his teacher was told that he could not teach young Bruce Lee, or all the other students in the school would leave and he would no longer have a livelihood. And so what he did was he acquiesced. He essentially kicked Bruce Lee out of the school, but then he continued to teach him privately. And so Bruce Lee is very conscious from a very early age, I guess is what I'm saying, racism, you know, cultural tribalism, you know, and the impact of hate and ignorance and all that kind of stuff from a super, super young age, I would say more so than a lot of other people might be. So he's already a very gifted martial artist, but yeah, he's also a teenage boy.
Right.
And, you know, and it was the thing, I guess, for these young men who were studying martial arts to, you know, like drag racing, they would meet on the rooftops and do a martial art, you know, fight off kind of thing. Unsanctioned, you know,
right.
And getting into trouble. And yeah. So he goes to the US and he goes to school. I forget where he goes to school.
Oakland.
Where he went? Oakland. And does he meet Linda at school?
He meets Linda. So he's in Oakland for high school and he actually applies himself and does really well. And then he goes to, is it called UW, University of Washington in Seattle? That's what they call it. I remember that from Singles, the movie. But that's that's where they met. And he was teaching these classes and he would teach them in the courtyard, on the football field, like, you know, because he got into some fights there. He gets to America. It's after the Korean War. So anybody Asian is picked on. Because
it's right before the Vietnam War.
Right. Yes. There's a lot of anti-Asian attitudes at the time. Mm-hmm. And he could speak English very well. He just spoke it with an accent. And so that made and he tried to work on that. But he made sure to speak proper English. He made sure that his penmanship was excellent. He was really presenting as well as he could.
Yeah.
While staying himself.
While saying himself, and I think, I mean, one of the things that I came away with in reading this book, and to some extent to watching the movie, which you can hear from my tone,
we'll get to it.
He was so talented at so many things. In addition to being, you know, a gifted martial artist and a gifted actor and obviously a gifted dancer and a very good father and all of this stuff, he was also a very gifted academic. He was not only a good scholar, he was a good, you know, he really had a thirst for knowledge, but he also was a natural teacher. Mm-hmm. And he had this, from what I can see when I look at his life, a lot of it, he just has this kind of teacher's drive to, you know, lift the floor for everybody kind of thing that I really admire. And especially that it's something that he is already practicing in college. I mean, he's still a super young man. He's already starting to teach, you know, he's already trying to like apply these principles. I think obviously, you know, that his student experience in Hong Kong must have, you know, so many teachers I know, because my mom was a teacher, so many teachers I know, you know, when you ask them what made them want to do that, they always have, I had this teacher who, you know, changed my life. I had this teacher who inspired me. And so, you know, clearly he seems to have had some of that, but he becomes a teacher at a super young age and in an unconventional kind of a way, because he's just not a conventional person. He's never been the norm.
No. And he was told, we can't teach enemies our words, our practices. And he said, that's ridiculous. I want to teach people who want to learn. Oh, I don't care where they come from. You know, I just want people to learn, because I think he thought it would make you a better person, all of it. It was holistic for him. And so that's where he meets Linda. She goes to a few classes with some of her friends. They start dating. Her mother was, her father died when she was young. Her mother had raised her, and her mother was very alarmed that her daughter was dating a Chinese American. That's very true to the story. Eventually, she grew to love him and love her grandkids, blah, blah, blah. But they went from Seattle to Oakland, and they were doing these teaching schools. He was thinking about, I mean, yes, he had an acting background, but he didn't think he was going to be a, you know, big star in America. He was like, no, I want to teach this. This is what I want to do. And then he was at a championship in Long Beach and showed up there and was basically saying, we're doing it wrong. This is what I think needs to be done. This is how Kung Fu needs to be taught. 95% of this we could throw out. And this is why. And the movements need to change and everything. And it was a big deal. And somebody had a Super 8 camera and was there. And one of them also in the attendance was Jay Sebring, who was one of the hairdressers to the stars. He was one of the Manson victims. And he knew, I mean, I'm sorry. There's lots of tragedy going on here. Sorry.
There's a lot. It's such a, like, It's such a fraught time that it's really something.
So he becomes this trainer to the stars. Like Jay Sebring has him meet TV executives. He does these auditions. And then Steve McQueen finds him. And Roman Polanski says, oh, my wife's going to be in a movie and she has to do Kung Fu moves. Can you train her? So that's Shannon. I'm sorry. Who am I? Sharon Tate. Like I said, everybody. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He trained him. And Jabbar said, this is why I didn't get injured the 20 years I played. You know, or very, very infrequently because I did these practices. Bruce Lee, by the way, was 5'7" and usually about 135 pounds. Like very slight, but all muscle. This guy just, he would do the thumb push-ups, you know. He just was this machine. Eventually, he gets picked to be Kato in the show. And as Margot said, he has a black mask on. You can't even see how handsome he is. And he's so much shorter than his co-star.
He is, but you can't take your eye. He is the star of the show.
Right.
He is the star of the Green Hornet, for sure.
The show gets canceled. It was like a Friday night show. It just didn't get the ratings like Batman did. And so he was disappointed, but he wanted to do a bigger story anyway. And he was working with, and he was guest starring on all kinds of TV shows, Long Mirror or something like that. And then he's discussed an idea of what about a Kung Fu series about a traveler who goes around the country giving his lessons. TV people went, oh, that sounds great. We'll just hire some white person to do it.
Yeah, that's so great for not you.
For not you. So they hired David Carradine, which broke his heart. And it just, which of course it would.
Of course it would.
And we should also say, by the way, it's very true that he did go to Breakfast at Tiffany's. Like we talked about Breakfast at Tiffany's on this show. Where like the attitude was that Mickey Rooney played an Asian man. And we were always saying he was a buffoon. And in the original story, that wasn't the case at all. Like that was all his choice. And Blake Edwards, of course, like that's them.
Yeah.
Screwing with the material.
In the book, for those of you who are around for that episode, it was a while ago, but right. In the book, that character is like a serious, respected artist. Mm-hmm. It's nothing like in the movie at all. Also, at the same time, I'm just thinking because he is on the West Coast, I'm sure he also is interacting because he's the same age. Anybody who is his age in school who is of ethnically Japanese would have been carted off by our government. Mm-hmm. They're often called Japanese internment camps. So let's be clear, they were American internment camps. And so he would have been very conscious of that as well. I mean, he is just such an interesting, such an important scholar. But yeah, so basically what we're saying is he thought of Kung Fu, which was a massive hit, and they stole his idea and put a white guy in the role instead of him.
Asian men and women were viewed as servants. You were going to laugh at them for their accents and for their amiability and all that.
That's so hilarious how they're bilingual.
right. And it's, and that's the kind of stuff he fought. And that's part of the reason. And so he goes to Hong Kong and starts making these kung fu movies. Well, it gets to Hong Kong, and then he finds out that he's a huge star there because they called it the Kato Show. That's what it is, by the way. But it was such a so everywhere he went, he was famous. So he could make the movies he wanted to do with. But it was a much smaller budget. Everything had to be scaled down. But they became so successful that they got bigger and bigger and bigger. He had Chuck Norris in these movies and Kareem.
It was kind of an innovative time for that genre as well. I mean, it was just the timing of it was so perfect. Yeah. So he's able to. Although he is still facing racism there because he's too Western in many ways. He's viewed as too Western for Chinese culture. But he does have a lot of cachet that he doesn't have. He should have for sure, but he doesn't have in the U.S. And it's such an interesting trajectory of his career that he is, he's making headway in Hollywood and then he has this setback because racism. And so he goes to Hong Kong where he's experiencing some racism, but because he's got this Hollywood background, he's able to build his film career there, which then launches him back into the Hollywood trajectory. I mean, it is those movies. they're just so fun. They're so much fun. They really do hold up because he holds up, you know, he's so charismatic, and you just, even if you've seen the movie a zillion times, you just want to see how it turns out. And you just like, every time you watch that fight again, you see something new. Yeah, his things, like, you can just watch them over and over and over and over again. They're so entertaining and so much fun. Yeah, I love that. There was a whole thing about Chuck Norris for a long time. Like, he lied. He denied that he was a student of Bruce Lee's and that Bruce Lee had anything to do with his skill and prowess as a martial artist, I guess. I read somewhere, but then I also saw and for myself that he later on felt really bad about that and put out this like really sincere apology about, you know, Bruce Lee was the greatest. And I'm really ashamed that I didn't, you know, give him the credit that he deserved, kind of thing, which I was like, wow, Chuck Norris.
Yes, for him. Yeah. I mean, that's a big thing. Yeah. It takes a big person to admit their mistakes. I think it does. And people should be applauded for that because not enough people do. He's a symbol of masculinity too. Like, he's a sex symbol and he's a symbol of strength, which, you know, that changed. And I know I have a lot of Asian friends, but I grew up on the coast. I mean, I do have, and they tell me, like, he's a huge star in the household. He was somebody to, you know, when somebody, you know, kids would see an Asian kid, they wouldn't want to pick on him because, oh, he might know Kung Fu because they've seen the Bruce Lee movie. So I'm going to be a little nicer. I'm
we sure know this
he saved
bizarre.
A lot of kids getting hurt. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure he did. But on top of that, he was just a badass. He was just so...
He was. But he also, he has something about his performance. And this is just, it's just him. That they hold up so well. That no matter how many times you see it, there's just this freshness about it. He also has this kind of, this light and levity. And you kind of get the sense that he is just... There's just this joy there in what he's doing that comes across, and it's infectious. You know, you just want to watch more and more and more.
Yeah. So he did have an injury, and it was in 1970, and he was in his backyard
weightlifting.
That's where it happened. He was lifting weights. He would lift like his weight. I think it was like 135, you know, it was like a deadlift kind of thing. And he didn't warm up enough, he says. He was rushing through it. And then he badly hurt his back. And the doctor said, you're not going to be able to practice Kung Fu again. Not that he wasn't going to walk again, but that he wasn't going to practice Kung Fu. And it was enormous pain. And I've had back issues. And it's very hard to get out of bed. It's hard to sit. It's hard to stand. It's hard to move. He did. He used, obviously, his principles. And his wife, Linda, helped him write down these things to help him get out of his funk. Because he was, like, for three months, he couldn't move. Which, for him, it's like telling me not to breathe. It's very hard.
Yeah.
And then also, he is healing himself here. He also did, though, use steroids, injections for the pain, which I used in my ankle. I had a horrible injury a few years ago. It's the only thing that works for me. So let's get to, unfortunately, the part where in July of 1970, it's going to be 50 years this year.
That's amazing. So he's building his career. And those movies were a global phenomenon, the movies that he made in Hong Kong. And so who comes knocking at the door again? It's Hollywood. Hollywood's like, hey, Bruce Lee, remember us? Come on back and make us a movie. And, you know, because those movies were really making a lot of money. And so Hollywood's like, well, we could, you know, we know we have Bruce Lee's phone number. So he is making perhaps his biggest movie ever. It's still a mystery. There's a lot of speculation about what happened. And I really appreciated the way that that Shannon Lee, just getting back to the book, that Shannon Lee talks about that aspect of her father's life. It was sort of sudden, but there were also some kind of things that happened leading up to it. He had collapsed, I think, of some time before, and they didn't really know why. And so she, as his daughter, has to kind of reconcile that she says, you know, it's taken me some work, but I've had to come to terms with the fact that I may never know what happened.
also, you know, that people make a big deal trying to find out, which has to be like bringing it up all over again.
Right?
Every few
like
years
all the
is
time.
A new theory. Mm-hmm. There's a show about it, or there's one that just came out this past November. And so what happened was he was working very hard on Enter the Dragon. He was at an actress's apartment and apparently a producer as well. He drank with them, and he wasn't a big drinker, but he drank with them. There was some traces of marijuana in his system, not whatever. He says he has a terrible headache, and he had an epileptic seizure, some kind of a seizure, just a few weeks before.
Yes. And he was having some strange episodes of headaches and whatnot. Yeah.
And he also supposedly had taken out his sweat glands because he didn't want to sweat so much on film. But Hong Kong is apparently a very humid place and a very hot and humid place. And it was the middle of summer. Is at the apartment. He says he has a headache, and she gives this pain pill, Equagesic. And it was like a super aspirin.
It was a combo kind of a pain pill.
Like a pain pill and anxiety or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so she gives him the pill and says, why don't you lay down in my bed? And so he lays down. It's like 7:30 at night. And then the producer calls back and says, where's Bruce? He's supposed to be someplace. And she's always sleeping. I'll see if he's awake. And she can't wake him up. And so they're calling each other back and forth when they really need to call an ambulance. But mm-hmm. Bruce dies either on site or at the hospital, but he's mm-hmm. gone. And then after that, there was all this stuff because, like we said, he was a huge celebrity. He was controversial, and he was in some woman's apartment. And at first, people didn't say that's where he died. And so, and Linda is, you know, she's young. She has two little babies.
Two kids.
I mean, and she goes there, and she's like ready to pass out. She's like so upset. He dies, and then they label his death misadventure, which is just mm-hmm. an open invitation for people forever to then want to speculate. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk a lot about that later. But over the years, people have said, oh, it was a gangster hit. People have said, oh, it's a curse. Obviously, it's a curse. People have said he was dehydrated. He had his sweat glands removed. Then the most recent one that I saw that was being passed around the media was that he was overhydrated, and that's what set it off. But it was cerebral edema. So his brain...
Right, his brain was swelled. Yeah.
Swelled, very, very large. Like, I think its normal is 3 pounds, and his was like 3.5 pounds. So that, and I'm mm-hmm. sure that was very
a
painful.
Lot. Yeah.
But, so he dies... And Linda has to carry on, and the movie Enter the Dragon comes out just a little while later. And it becomes a huge smash all over the world. I mean, lines around the block, and every Chinatown around the world, he's just a huge sensation, but it goes around the media. And it becomes that thing in the media. It's around the time, by the way, it's just a few years after, you know, Jim Morrison died, Jimi Hendrix. There's that whole like, oh, this person is sexy and dead, and now they become immortal. His movies are played all the time. When I was a kid, mm-hmm. Like you said, Saturday afternoons, like, and Bruce Lee movies, they go together like peanut butter and jelly. And there's all these people over the years who just kind of like worship at the altar of him. Nobody's pretending he was a perfect person, by the way. I mean, I think
no.
But we all understand like all the obstacles he had to overcome.
Oh my goodness.
To be who he was.
Yeah.
And what he's, and then it's
seriously.
His message and what it means to people. Like
he developed his own kind of martial arts.
Yeah.
On top of everything else, just honestly, like even if he never made a movie, just his legacy as a teacher is so extraordinary, yeah. You know, but I get the fascination in wanting to make a film of his life. But I think as in terms of as a legacy and talking about the man himself and what he believed and the impact he made, I think this book is such a good example of, you know, the right way to do something like that.
There was a book that came out in 70. There's all these books that come out over the years and specials. I mean, every 5 years on the anniversary of his death, there's a big thing that happens. And Linda does write a book in 89 called The Bruce Lee Story. And she co-wrote it with someone who was a Bruce Lee student, and he was also a screenwriter. So she was helping her. They fall in love. They get married. Then they break up. And then this movie comes out, and then a few years later, he's somebody who's written like 40 books. He does a lot of biographies and stuff. He writes a really tasteless book about Bruce Lee that's said things like he was cheating on Linda, he was a pothead, he was, you know, all roided out, all steroided out, and he was 140 pounds, y'all. I mean,
right.
That is not steroided out.
No.
That's not the case. It's trashy. There's such some elements of that. But so anyway, but in 93, we have this movie. And should we start going into the movie? Maybe we'll play the trailer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Your birth certificate.
Bruce Lee.
It sounded very American.
I'm going to America. French fries. Sky's the limit, that's what they say.
Not a Chinaman's chance. They say that too.
I'm different.
Your kind don't understand English. You guys killed my dad in Korea. You think I'm happy to see you in my gym?
Don't touch me.
Or what?
Huh? Or I'll touch you back.
You're not really an American.
It's this guy Lee. He's awfully Oriental.
He's playing Oriental.
And you can't change people with your fists.
You kiss him. Kiss him. At least.
He defied tradition.
I'd like to take some lessons. I'd like to give them. Now, you know I'm not Chinese.
I've noticed that.
You've been charged with violating the martial arts code.
This is the first Bruce Lee Kung Fu Institute.
We do not teach our secrets to the enemy.
I'll teach whoever wants to learn. Some of them chop sake flip, man.
He began a revolution.
I have developed a way of fighting with no fixed positions.
And became a leader.
You are ordered to stop teaching.
You die in Hong Kong. I've seen it.
Our director is Rob Cohen, and he also co-wrote the screenplay, and it's based on, you know, Linda's book, The Man Only I Knew. So I think it's not even this one. It's another one.
It's the first one, which is very difficult to get. It is out of print. That's why we're not talking about it. And why I was saying, you know, I don't know how she tells the story in that book versus how this movie is telling the story. And so just like a caveat to everybody, we're going on what we learned from Shannon's book, which, as we said before, is excellent. So, 1993.
Rob Cohen is our director. And who do you get to play Bruce Lee? That has to be an intimidating ask, you know, when you're looking at actors.
Just Bruce Lee.
And Brandon Lee was approached and said, I don't feel comfortable because I don't want to do love scenes, you know. You know.
Fair enough.
And he was also doing The Crow at the time. We were talking about this off the air. So they get Jason Scott Lee, who was not a martial artist. He was a dancer and an actor. And then we have Lauren Holly, who plays... Linda. We have Nancy Kwan, who has a role as a San Francisco like restaurateur.
His boss. Kind of a little bit of a mentor.
Yeah. And then we have Robert Wagner in this movie.
For some reason. Robert Wagner is playing his manager? Is he his manager?
Or producer?
He's clearly... I've never seen a movie where you had a character that was so clearly meant to be like an amalgam of a bunch of people.
There's a lot of problems with this movie.
Clearly, Robert Wagner is there taking the place of a lot
like
of other people
five
they
different
didn't want to
guys.
Hire.
Right. James Coburn would have been an interesting choice. I think he was alive at the time, and he knew Bruce Lee very well. They were good friends. But that's not what they did. And so there are choices. No. I mean, overall, I think it's fine. And it's if it's you've never heard of Bruce Lee before, you might check out his movies after and then be like, oh, my God. But it's not going to give you a really great, I don't think, a great idea.
No.
And it's too bad because it's such a great opportunity. And it had Linda's consent, but I'm sure at this point she was like, I don't know.
But also, in fairness to the family, and Shannon is actually in this film. She's singing. And she has a really nice voice.
Yes, she does.
In fairness to the family, like, you don't know how the edit's going to be. You don't know, you know, even if they had shown them a script, it's possible that, I don't know, you know, it's hard to know. I couldn't find anything where they're talking about this movie, I guess is what I'm saying. I don't know. You know, I didn't find them either saying, oh, we hate this movie.
This is the best.
You know, we totally back this movie 100%.
I just saw that I just saw that she said that they use the device of a dragon, and there's this dragon that is chasing Bruce Lee literally from his
demon.
Child, a demon.
Yeah.
And so she said, oh, yeah, Bruce mentioned that like in the last few months. But I think he may have been just sort of like, I'm exhausted. I'm tired. There's so much, so many deadlines.
I've been running like a demon's chasing me. But even so, like that part I'm not mad at, I got to say. That's fine. Okay. I get it. And especially because they're even at that point, and okay, so let's talk about the timing of this because we were just going over this before. Yeah. Because this is important to understand. As Margot mentioned, Brandon Lee was approached to do this role. Not that he couldn't have, of course he could have, because he's very gifted, extremely talented in his own right. Mm-hmm. Certainly talented enough to do this, but I get not wanting to be in a love scene with somebody playing your mom. And on top of all the other stuff. So while this movie is in production, sort of as this movie is finishing production, Brandon Lee is making The Crow. And which was also a huge hit. Between the time, I think, if I understand correctly, between the time when Dragon, the Bruce Lee story wraps and when it is released in movie theaters, Brandon Crowe is killed in production of The Crow. I can't even imagine how hard this must have been, because I'm sure the family during production must have been, you know, going through reliving all of this loss and all of it. And then to have this massive loss, I just can't. But even before that, even when the movie was in production and Brandon Lee was still alive, there was already talk about like, oh, the family was cursed. Like, oh, there was this curse, the Lee family. And that's why he died so young, is because
I'm
not big on curses. But I get, so for that, I sort of get the whole, like, this trope of this demon that is coming around. And to me, that's what I was sort of, that's what that kind of embodied, was the idea that, like, maybe we're cursed. And that's not the part that bothers me. the part that bothers me, especially after reading Shannon's book, which admittedly was not out yet when this movie came out, in fairness. But especially after reading Shannon's book, and getting a glimpse of how complicated and extraordinary a life he really had, even if you just go, you know, just by the facts, you don't need to have all this extra mumbo jumbo.
I'll say
fighting
this.
The chefs in the restaurant, and like,
there's too many fight scenes. And I get it. We're doing a movie about Bruce Lee, but there's too many fight scenes. There's like three of them back to back. To start.
But why can't we have to start? And they're always, and like to, the impression, if you don't know anything about Bruce Lee and you're watching this film, the impression is that you get is that Bruce Lee learned martial arts and then he was a big hothead. And every chance he got in a fight and kicked people's butts at the drop of a hat, basically. Right. We have these crazy fight scenes that are just outlandish. He would not have done. He simply would not have done. Why don't you show him
learning,
studying, you know, why don't you show his teacher being pressured to kick him out of school? Like, that's an amazing story. Why don't you show him learning privately with his teacher, you know, into his young adulthood? Why don't you show him in these, you know, rooftop matches with other martial arts students, that's an amazing story. Instead, we get this contrived garbage of like he shows up at a dance and whips off his glasses and like what?
And rips off his shirt.
I honestly like that. That scene is so outlandish that I was like, I thought to myself, because I'd never seen this movie before. I thought, oh, this must be his first movie. Oh, that's a funny. I seriously thought that we were watching this. We were going to find out that this was his first movie, that somebody was going to yell cut.
Right.
And I got we were going to see that this was all a movie because it was so, it was that contrived.
To dance with her.
This one's mine. Get one of your own.
She is one of my own.
Leave in the way. Come on, try that again. I'm gonna get you, you little yellow bastard. Smash your face in. Try it, okay?
Yeah. For what reason? There's no reason.
There's
when his
literally
whole life is so extraordinary.
Drunken sailors harassing women on the dance floor, and he's the one person. Somebody else would have been fighting, but yeah, it goes from that, and then he's
completely made up.
It's all made up, and it's like I guess they want a big wow at the beginning, like look at Bruce Lee, like this is for the new generation, which is 20 years after he had died. It does like it, and then he comes to America and he's in that fight at the restaurant and yeah he did, but there's also a fight where there's so many fights, and I know that seems ridiculous, but that's not all he did, and it's not
why aren't we seeing his martial arts in the context in which he actually used it? What that is fascinating and is great movie making. Why, like in Grandmaster, you know, these martial artists are at the height of their art. You know, it's much more believable, even though those things are, you know, there's also a fiction overlay in that movie. It makes sense. They're not just like, oh, you stepped on my foot. Time to, you know,
right.
Throw you across the room and out the window.
Out of nowhere.
I mean,
it's just, it's very, very
it's
silly.
Very upsetting.
There's one where he's fighting a guy and he's like, all right, tell me, you know, it's like uncle, like cry uncle, like say you give up. Okay, I give up. And then the guy just kicks him in the back. And then that's how they introduce the back injury, which is not how it happened.
It was just not how it happened.
Not how it happened at all. And he wasn't in a hospital. And they have this contraption for him that's like Hannibal Lecter-ish. Like,
I mean,
a high school production of Lecter.
That whole thing, he's teaching in, is it Seattle or San Francisco at that point?
Probably San Fran.
Okay, he's got a school. Yes, you're right.
He's married. He has Brandon. Yeah.
He's married. He's got Brandon. He's got this school. And basically the local Chinese American Business Association comes. This is what happened. It comes to him and is like, hey, you know, we don't really agree with you bringing in people who are not Chinese into our neighborhood, which in a way I sort of understand, you know, look at what gentrification and, you sure. know, that was not necessarily good news for them, that to have other people kind of poking around in their area that they had built up for themselves.
And you should understand, by the way, like the San Francisco Chinatown is ginormous and very powerful for them.
And established.
Yes.
Yeah. So I get it. I get both sides of the story. Right. And and Bruce Lee, and I think they even do have like a match, but it's like an actual sanctioned official type match. This movie has them say, okay, you know, we're going to challenge you to a match, and if you win, you can keep your school open, and if not, then you got to get out of Dodge. And they show up in this like medieval dungeon with the spotlights and the fog machine. And are you kidding me? What is this? Yeah. Why can't we just do it the way you did it? It's so fascinating the way it actually happened. Why are you throwing, why is it a music video all of a sudden? I don't get it.
And all the human stuff, I think, works. I think
Lauren Holly
is great.
I love the relationship
with
them.
I like them in the movie theater. Really good. I like the scene with her mother, with her mother being.
Agreed.
I think that was, because that's probably exactly how it did go.
Let's look at this from all angles. How will you live?
I'm opening a school in Oakland. Maybe one in Palo Alto. Soon you'll become a chain like McDonald's.
I don't want to rain on your parade, Mr. Lee. But the world needs hamburgers. It doesn't need judo.
Kung fu.
Whatever.
More and more people are studying it all the time. That's how I put myself through school.
Okay. I'll give you that. So let's get down to the real issue. Children. After all, Linda, that's what marriage is really about, children.
You want to have children someday.
Ah. But what will they be? They won't be white, and they won't be oriental. They'll be some kind of half-breed, and they won't be accepted by either side.
They'll be American. Linda's American. I'm American.
You're an American citizen. You're not really an American.
Bruce,
you'd better put a band-aid on that cut, Mr. Lee.
Bruce!
I spoke to him like a gentleman. You heard me. My favorite china.
Mom!
You can do better than that. Believe me, you'll forget about him in a month.
Michael Learned from the Waltons. We talked about the Waltons before. But yeah.
I love her. Yeah.
I love her too. She's so great. So that part's real and that part's human. And
I like
get
all
that.
Of that. I think that's super good. And the part with him and his dad when he's a little boy. And
yes.
I like all of that. I think that's all. That's the best part of this movie.
When his father sends him to San Francisco and goes into the whole
mm-hmm.
history of the
family. I really
family.
Like all that.
I love all that. That's all really well done. But I don't understand why
these fight scenes are so dumb.
They're so silly, and there's no train. Like,
so
you don't train like Steve McQueen. You don't have a scene like where you get a guy to play Steve McQueen. I mean, who's dead? You can get anybody. I mean, to play him, you know, you can use his name, Sharon Tate. You don't show him
there's
on movie
so
set.
Many things
training
that you
Sharon
could have
Tate
done besides these stupid fights.
Yeah, there's too many of them, and it's like it's. It's just one after the other. And then by the time we all get to Hong Kong with him, it's a little tiresome. I get why he's tired. I'm like, I'm tired too. It's like, this is getting exhausting. And so they show how exhausted he was, and they show how cool the movies looked. And I'm sure that was super fun to do.
That I agree. That is very well done in this movie. Yes,
yeah. The recreations.
Agreed. Yes. The recreations are very well done under the circumstances. They do a good job with that,
yeah.
For sure. But yeah, but these just like, why are you adding all of these extra feuds and grudges with like the guy and his brother, and now he's in Hong Kong and he's going to fight Bruce on the set of the movie? Why? What? Why aren't we seeing Bruce Lee's very innovative stunts and things that he's doing in these movies?
Why don't we see him doing an interview, doing the Be Like Water stuff?
Hello.
Which is what
right?
People, like I said, like to this day, people watch this and they're blown away by it. I just, lots of choices I don't understand here. Lots of choices.
I like that we see his book.
Mm-hmm.
We see him writing the book, and that I appreciate. And I love all the stuff about the school. I think that's really cool. That I enjoyed very much. But it's really this dumb stuff about the way that the fighting is done. There are no accounts of Bruce Lee getting into brawls left and center.
No,
because somebody looked at him the wrong way, you know?
He actively was, people tried to pick on him and he wouldn't do it. He would just laugh it off. He would just kind of like, oh, yeah, check. Yeah, I'll do that later. You know, whatever. People try that all the time with him. He didn't do that. He didn't believe that.
Which brings us to Mr. Tarantino.
Okay.
Sidebar.
Okay, so now let's just say the movie ends. And I like the way the movie just says, I'd rather remember how he lived.
I do like the end of the movie. Yes, I agree. They handled that ending extremely well. I appreciated that. I was impressed.
Yes.
By the way they ended it, yes.
Because it could have been very salacious. It could have been
Was. I thought it was super well done. The end was,
I appreciated that. And I think
glad to see how they ended it.
Once again, I like all the actors here. They're doing a good job.
They're doing a great job.
The sets look really good, like when they're recreating the stuff. The music choices are pretty good. I mean, I saw this in the movie theater and I remember kind of like, what am I missing here? Like, there's some stuff I like, but most of it's like, three fight scenes. I'm like,
the third fight is
30 minutes
done.
Of fight scenes.
Done.
Let's see him as a little kid. Let's see him, you know, have his parents teach him some lessons. Like, what did he learn from
his
grandparents?
So much interesting stuff that actually happened.
He grew up in a home with like 30 people in a small space. Like, what was that like? I mean, it's
so
just,
many things.
I don't get it.
Choices.
Okay. Choices. People make these choices. So if let's fast forward. And was it 2021 that Quentin Tarantino's movie Once Upon a Time in Hollywood comes out?
And is that when it came out? I can't. Let me look that up.
So it's Brad Pitt is our lead. He's not our hero. Leonardo DiCaprio's in this movie. Margot Robbie.
It's 2019.
Wow. Okay. So this is a year
right before
the book here. Okay. So I get it. And I like Tarantino movies. I think for me, that's diminishing returns with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We'll do like Jackie Brown one day. That's like, that's one of my favorites of his.
Oh yeah. I like Jackie Brown. Yeah.
But this is his material. It's his script. And I remember when the trailer came out. And there is this whole scene where Bruce Lee says, my body is a dangerous weapon. If if I kill someone, I have to go to jail. And then Brad Pitt goes, well, you would go to jail because man's, it's a good joke, but I don't understand why he's being treated as a joke.
Why?
Anybody in Hollywood.
Listen.
Anybody at all in Hollywood, you could have put in that place.
What's the point of the scene? The point of the scene is Brad Pitt's character has no scruples and will pick a fight with anybody
and
ruthless and kill them and is ruthless and violent and will kill them. Why are we bringing here's the thing that bothers me. The Bruce Lee that's in, and I've seen this part. I've not seen this whole movie. Okay. So I'm just commenting on the bit about Bruce Lee and tell me if you disagree. Mm-hmm. The Bruce Lee that's in this movie is the Bruce Lee that's depicted in Dragon, the Bruce Lee story. He's a hothead.
Yes.
He's picking a fight. He was not going to pick a fight. He wants to keep this job. He's hoping it will lead to other things. The last thing he's going to do is kung fu a stuntman. No. Sorry. No.
I get that. So there's this book that comes out, and I think like this is must what Tarantino read. Because sometimes, God bless white men, but I'm going to have to say something. Y'all, you need to like rein your stuff in. You need to get some therapy and rein your stuff in. You know, somebody in the world that existed that's Asian and was tiny and was just super intelligent and a badass on top of everything else. Like Quentin Tarantino, born with a ton of charisma himself. Why do you get a pick on somebody like Bruce? Why do you have to put him down to make yourself feel good?
And to make it worse, he just made it worse and worse and worse. Like he stepped in the dog poop and then he just tracked it all over the carpet. To make it worse, he goes on that. Well, even before he goes on Joe Rogan. Is that the guy's name?
Joe Rogan. Yeah.
Ugh. can we just pause for ugh? His justification was, well, you know, it was going to be either Bruce Lee or Jim Brown, who, by the way, passed away yesterday.
Yes, we love Jim Brown.
It was going to be Bruce Lee or Jim Brown. So
it was going to be somebody of another race.
Or it had to be somebody of another race fighting
a marginalized
the white guy.
Person.
Really? Yeah, Jim Brown, by the way, complicated character.
Yes.
we talked about him when we talked about One Night in Miami, which we loved. But yeah, I mean, like, you're not Just keep digging, Quentin.
Why?
And
why,
then we've got this interview on Joe Rogan.
Shannon Lee, the whole story, if you never knew anything about Bruce Lee and then you saw this movie, you would think he was all talk and no action, arrogant to the nth degree. And by the way, Quentin Tarantino, excuse me, someone for arrogance? Really? Right. Are you kidding me? And yeah, you need confidence to exist in this world and exist in Hollywood. Try being an Asian person in the 60s. Try right? being a slight man. And then, sure, there were stuntmen that were intimidated by him, or maybe they thought he was a little too much. Who cares? You know, we all have...
Exactly.
Who cares? Who cares?
Who cares?
Why? So he has to, you know, go on that train of, oh, he wasn't that great. I can create a character that could beat him. So what?
Why?
Why?
And what's our takeaway here?
I don't understand.
Well, you saw the movie. What was the takeaway?
The takeaway was that this... So we're supposed to be so attracted to Brad Pitt, who looks great, by the way. He's sexy, all that. But we're supposed to understand that deep, deep down, this guy's a killer. That's all I got. Also think it's... And also, let's go back to the Kill Bill movies, where he completely glommed off of Bruce Lee movies in there. You know, cosplaying, basically, all Bruce Lee stuff in his film. So you were influenced by him, like everybody else. So why are you now, like, did you get called out for that, for not showing enough praise for Bruce Lee? I don't know. Shannon Lee basically writes this letter to him after hearing that horrible interview and saying, like, you know, basically, take my father's name out of your mouth. I'm done.
Yeah.
Just stop.
Why?
And
just cut it out. Yeah.
And Bruce, and then Quentin Tarantino just sort of doubles down and says, well, I understand why she's upset. That's her dad. But why is everybody else? I'm like, because a lot of us really look up to Bruce Lee and think he's special.
She also is the Bruce Lee estate. And it's not like, oh, this is her dad. And then the little,
you know how women are.
Woman. Yeah.
With their fifis.
She is the manager of the Bruce Lee estate. And if the manager of the Bruce Lee estate is telling you this is not a good or accurate representation of Bruce Lee, I'm sorry, there's not going to be a higher authority than that. So yeah, you better keep his name out of your mouth then. The patronizing.
Yes. That's another thing he is.
Patting her on the head tone, like, oh, I get it. It's your daddy. Oh, this is a very accomplished, educated expert on this particular thing.
You're about the same age. You know, she's not a little girl. I mean, you know.
No.
Exactly. It's so infuriating.
It's not just because it's her dad. Is what I'm saying.
No, and there's little white kid like me that grew up in the suburbs knows about Bruce Lee and understands why he's important. You just because he's a person that, you know, you and I are both writers and he wants to write something and create stuff. I totally get that.
Yeah.
I get being
Make
fanciful.
It Burt Ward.
But yeah, why not
make it Robin?
Make it anybody else. Steve McQueen. Or be
seriously.
Anybody. Like, they're all arrogant. They're all like what do you care? Like,
there are so many other ways you could have gone with that.
If he was arrogant, let's just say that. He could be arrogant. He could back it up. He could back it up. And by the way, he was a human being. Nobody thought he was perfect. Nobody thought he was a total angel. Nobody thought like he never had a bad day in his whole life. Because nobody's like that. People are like that are so boring. Like, we understand his complexity is what makes him also so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he has any respect for that.
No. And I understand, like, I'm not saying that it was a choice that was made out of racism. I'm just saying that it was a choice that was oblivious of some of the, you know, the racist
undertones
over and undertones going on here. Yeah. And then having them pointed out to you to double down on it.
It just, it's such an
icky.
It's like a crime against humanity if somebody calls you out on something.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a million reasons why, but I say, no, it's still not okay. Just because something, you have a reason for something, doesn't mean you have to do it. It's just, And also just to not take in that message ultimately. It's gross. It's just not. Yeah. And because he promoted his book, and I didn't get the book, but I had friends who got, he had, did a novelization of his own movie, because of course he did. And so he expands more on Bruce Lee in there. And I, my friend texted me, goes, don't get this book, Margo. You will really hit a rage, because the movie already made me crazy enough. He goes, this is cringy. Yeah. It's very cringy. Like, he really doubles down. And why? Why Bruce Lee?
I know. I don't get it. I saw this interview. I felt really bad. We were just saying, we were watching all these really cool interviews with Chien and Lee. And I saw this one interview that she did, and I forget who the interviewer is, but it was right before Once Upon a Time in Hollywood comes out. Interviews like, okay, so I know you've heard this movie's coming out and it's got Bruce Lee in it. And Chien and Lee is like really earnest in saying, yes, I know, you know, people have told me about it, but, you know, I'm going to just give it the benefit of the doubt. I'm just going to wait. I'm just really hope that, you know, I really hope that it's going to be, you know, it's going to be, it'll be a nice representation of my dad. And, you know, but I, you know, I don't have any control over it. And, but I just really, you know, I just, all I can do is like hope that it's going to be, you know, I'm not going to make any judgment on it basically until I actually see it for myself. And the interviewer was like, yeah, me too. I'm just going to, you know, I hope it'll be good, but, you know, we'll just see how. And then, you're walking, you're like, no, it's not, though. It's not going to be good. You're not going to be happy with it because it's real bad. Yeah, I can understand. Like I said, I can understand in the moment you're trying to make this story, making this kind of a choice and being oblivious to the implications of it. But once the estate of Bruce Lee has spoken to you about it, to be so disrespectful, to just be dismissive. You know, it was disrespectful in the first place, and now it's just, you're just disrespectful is all it is. Just ugh.
Yeah, it's gross. And I blame Somebody Brad Pitt went. Too, by the way. He could have raised.
He was there.
Score. Yeah,
he's Brad Pitt. He could have said something.
Yeah.
Brad.
Yeah, right?
Was he gonna fire him?
Right, exactly. Anyway,
And the actor and the actress doing a good job. It's just the writing.
Yeah.
Very disrespectful. And just not him. It's just not who he is.
It's not his fault at all. No, it's he's just doing a gig.
But okay. So that was our little sidebar about Quentin Tarantino. And I really appreciated and could totally see Shannon Lee's point in the, what do we want to call that? An op-ed or just the piece that she wrote in response to his, shenanigans. So, Dragon, the Bruce Lee story, or Be Water, My Friend by Chien Lee.
Oh, Be Water, My Friend, of course.
Yes, I know. Yeah, I want, yeah. Because when I read the book, because I hadn't seen this movie before again, when I read the book, I was like, I want to see this story. I'm excited to see this story. And then I'm watching it, and you're right. You were like 10 minutes in, and who is this guy?
Yeah.
What is this I'm saying? What? None of this happened.
It was a disappointment.
So it was really a disappointment, and it's unfortunate. But again, Grandmaster is really good.
I can't wait to see it. That's on my. I wrote it down. It's on my list.
Book. It's been a long time since we've had like a decided win for the book. Because we've had some pretty good books lately and pretty good films.
We've had some really great material lately.
What are we doing next?
Okay, so I guess we decided, and what we're going to do next is we're going to go to the swinging 60s, I guess. And we're going to talk about Blow Up, which is a fabulous movie. It's based on a short story. It's in a book of short stories that you and I have. And it's streaming everywhere, so it's easy for everybody to get. Very exciting. That should be a really good one.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Once again, please follow us at all the places I mentioned. Also, you can see it in the show notes. We have all our stuff there. Our email, once again, is bookversusmoviepodcast@gmail.com. Please let us know if you want some stickers, and please leave us a subscribe and review if you like the show. If you don't like the show, it was nice meeting you. just go about your business.
Yes. However briefly.
Margot, where can they find you?
You can find me online at coloniabook.com, and all of my social media call outs are at She's Nacho Mama. And where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Brooklyn Margot. My site is Brooklyn Fit Chick. I'm on Instagram at Brooklyn Fit Chick, and I am on TikTok at Margot Donahue. And I will try to post some clips. I do movie clips on there. I got actually flagged by them. I think for one of the clips that I had was the music got flagged. So if I have some I can post on there, I will do that for you. All right, everyone. Have a great week, and we will be back soon with our next episode.
This is what it is, okay? I said, empty your mind. Be formless, shapeless, like water. Now, you put water into a cup, it becomes the cup. You put water into a bottle, it becomes the bottle. You put it in a teapot, it becomes the teapot. Now, water can flow or it can crash. Be water, my friend.
Thank you so much for listening to the Book vs. Movie podcast. We are a part of the Frolic Podcast Network. You can find more podcasts you will love at frolic.media/podcasts. We follow the hashtags LadyPodSquad and Potter Family. If you want to support the show, you can go to our Patreon page, go to PATREON, and look for Book vs. Movie podcast. We have a basic Facebook page, but we also have a private Facebook group. Go to Facebook and type in Book vs. Movie Podcast Group if you want to join that. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Book vs. Movie. Spell all those words out. If you'd like to send us an email, it's Book vs. Movie Podcast, spell that all out, at gmail.com. You can follow Margot D. at Brooklyn Fit Chick on social media, and Margot P. at She's Nacho Mama. Thanks so much again for checking out our show, and we'll be back soon with a new episode.